The people from many lands who built the facilities for the World Cup. I'm David Brancaccio. First, the White House has announced new guidelines that should allow people who can't pay back student loans to use bankruptcy. Right now, the bar is much higher for student loans compared to, say, credit card debt. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is here with details. Nancy?
David, this isn't a change in the law. Congress would need to do that. But the Education and Justice Departments came up with a new policy on how to handle these cases. And this only applies to federal student loans where the government is lending the money. These new guidelines help Justice Department lawyers decide whether to recommend that a judge wipe out someone's student loans when they file for bankruptcy.
And how will that change?
Well, under these guidelines, the person filing for bankruptcy will fill out an attestation form, and government lawyers will use the information there to determine if the debtor's expenses exceed their income. They'll also look at the person's age, if they have a disability, and if they even earned a college degree.
Attestation form. And this comes as the overall Biden administration plan to cancel student debt remains blocked by a federal judge.
Yeah, and there are about a half dozen lawsuits against that plan, making various arguments. Some states say they'd lose tax revenue. Others say the Biden administration needs congressional approval. This issue is eventually expected to be decided by the Supreme Court.
All right, Nancy Marshall-Genzer. Markets, S&P futures are up 0.6%. NASDAQ futures are up 0.8%. Now the 10-year interest rate up slightly, 3.8%. The founder of the Silicon Valley startup that falsely said it had a system to do blood tests with the prick of a finger faces sentencing today as a first-time offender. Elizabeth Holmes is unlikely to get the possible 20 years. She could face more than $800 million in restitution. World Cup kicks off Sunday in Qatar this month for our Econ Extra Credit series. We're watching the documentary film The Workers' Cup, where we meet some of the millions of immigrant workers who built the stadia and other infrastructure that make the games possible. Human rights organizations are pushing a campaign now to get more workers' compensation for injuries and other abuses, including illegal recruitment fees many workers had to pay. Let's get context from Natasha Iskander, a professor at New York University's Wagner School of Public Service and author of the book, Does Skill Make Us Human? Migrant Workers in 21st Century Qatar and Beyond. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That infrastructure that you'll see on television is fancy schmancy, yet those are not the conditions the workers find themselves, where they stay, where they eat, where they sleep.
Yes, the workers who are building this World Cup have built structures that contain some of the most complex, difficult, technically advanced, and innovative construction technologies anywhere in the world. And yet, those same workers did that under very difficult conditions. They did it working long hours, sometimes with forced overtime, often not receiving the wages they were promised, and in extreme temperatures.
And what we need to understand is that this is not just an overall system set up just to build stuff for these World Cup games. There's this kafala system that's used in many countries in the Middle East that brings in migrant labor, and that uses middlemen to run the system, and that implies certain things for the workers themselves.
That's right. I mean, the kafala system, literally, it just translates into sponsorship system. It's not dissimilar in its bones from temporary guest worker frameworks anywhere in the world, including in the U.S. In 2017, in partnership with the ILO, the International Labor Organization, Qatar started reforming this system. But what the reforms look like on paper is not what they look like in practice. Workers face retaliation if they try to change jobs. They can't easily leave the country. They are subject to chronic non-payment of wages and wage theft. And if they try to file a complaint or protest against these conditions, this often results in detention or deportation.
I don't know if it's the ironies, but it's a tension in our discussion that we should address, which is that not traveling to Qatar to do this work might have meant less pay.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was a decision that people in their home communities made because it absolutely made economic sense. What is important to note, though, David, is that prior to a reform that was instituted just recently, wages were indexed to the prevailing wage in the home country. So you could actually have workers working side by side on the same team, doing the exact same work and being paid very different wages depending on the level of poverty in their home country. The other thing to note is that even though it did make economic sense for workers to migrate to Qatar, the wages were not substantially higher than in their home country. And in fact, some companies I spoke with report challenges recruiting workers because the wages were not high enough to be attractive to the large numbers of workers that they needed to construct the cup.
Natasha Iskander, professor of urban planning and public service at NYU, is also author of the book, Does Skill Make Us Human? Migrant Workers in 21st Century Qatar and Beyond. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Another note out of Qatar today, there's news there will be no beer at the World Cup venues. After all, in contravention of an earlier promise by authorities in a country where alcohol use is severely restricted, the U-turn may violate a $75 million sponsorship agreement with Budweiser and annoy fans in attendance. And it raises questions about who's in control of the games themselves, soccer's governing body FIFA or the government of Qatar. Our digital producer is Redmond Caralipio. Our engineers are Jessen Dooler and Nick Esposito. I'm David Brancaccio. It's the Marketplace Morning Report. May PM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.